All right.
Are we live? Did it work?
I think so.
Okay. Hey, we're live. It's John. So I'm back. Contrary to popular belief, I may or may not have actually had that sex change.
May or may not.
May or may not.
Glenn is not with us. Funny enough, the reason is he was such a huge fan of your operation that he decided himself that he wanted to get it done. So I think he was having...
He took a budget route because he's only been going for a couple of weeks. That's going for a whole month.
Yeah, he's not doing the complete change. He's just getting the removal part done.
Oh, okay.
But I heard that he has to see a specialist because they had a hard time finding what needs to be removed.
Oh.
So that's... Yeah, it's...
That sucks.
It's tough. Oh, well.
That's rough.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Sorry. Not my problem. Hashtag his problem, not mine.
So, go ahead.
It's good to be back.
I know. It's good to hear your voice again.
I know.
So soothing.
Probably haven't been missed at all.
You haven't been yelling, so that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Compared to what I'm used to hearing. But we'll see.
Hmm.
You might start yelling.
I might.
It'll make me feel better.
Probably.
So. So, you're listening to the Arms Room if you haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah. Duh.
So if you clicked on the Arms Room and you're not sure that you listen to the Arms Room, then there's other things you probably should figure out in life.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Hello, Nate and Rebecca. How are you this morning? So glad you could join us live.
Heck yeah. So into recent news.
So we'll start this with, remember, we do still have troops overseas fighting the fight. And this past week, there was a EOD technician from the North Carolina National Guard got killed. Specialist James Slape. He's now been promoted to sergeant. But there's people still out there doing bad shit to bad people and doing their jobs. So
remember them.
Just because the media is not talking about the war anymore doesn't mean it's over, kids.
Yep. On a lighter note, remember that on Patreon, you can still listen to all our wonderful voices. Extra shows. We now have our 30-minute extra show. So every patron, whether you're $1 and up, you get an extra 30 minutes a week of listening to us to do follow-ups. So if you have any questions, especially today when we're talking about overlanding, if you have questions about it, remember to shoot it our way. And then next week we'll follow up with the questions, comments, concerns, snide remarks, everything. So,
nice.
Yeah. And we have the blog post that goes up. The show write-up.
You're so busy, Dave.
I'm trying. We do have our coupon codes that are still good with We Plead the Second. It's Training AZ, all one word, lowercase.
Mm-hmm.
And then KE Arms, we have Arms Room 2018.
Capital A, capital R.
Yep. So good to go. Do business with local companies. Makes a difference.
Or do business with companies that support the community as a whole.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because, I would imagine a fair portion of our listeners in Canada wouldn't consider these guys local.
No, that's true. Good point.
Unless they're snowbirds that come to visit us. And then they would be local. So when you're in town, hey.
Hey. We have a lot of them. So, Jim, take it away.
Jim.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
Go ahead. You get your moment.
Waiting on you.
Just dump that on me
because
waiting on
mentioned that getting ambushed like that before.
Yep.
Hi, I'm Jim.
We had something that you wanted to say.
There was something you wanted to introduce.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
This is your moment.
Redwire Gear moment, go.
All right. Sweet. Redwire Gear moment. So make sure you know how to use the items in your survival kit. This comes up a lot in a lot of different ways. And just make sure you know how to use your shit. Don't buy stuff and be like, cool, I have a widget. And then stick it in a backpack. And then when you have to use the widget, you have no idea what you're doing or if it's even a good widget. So buy two of them, try them out. If they work well, there you go. Now you know it works. Continue to use it and train with it regularly. Don't just buy it and stick it in a bag. So make sure you know how to use your stuff. That's pretty much all I got. Redwire Gear moment brought to you by redwiregear.com. Check us out. And then patrons, the coupon code is TARP, all caps. And I don't remember what the discount is. I think it's 10 or 15%.
So. Yeah. If you have any questions about discounts, just let us know.
Yeah.
We'll get them your way.
We have a ton of coupon codes all over the place.
Heck yeah. So I think that covers news. We can talk more about politics if we want.
Was there any other news? Anything at all?
Oh, last night, people might have seen visitors from outer space. That's how they're calling it a government conspiracy. SpaceX launched another rocket last night. about 7:21. This one, I actually, so we saw it coming down the hill. Then I looked it up, and they had a live feed, which is kind of cool. But this is the first one that they had the base rocket. So it was called a Falcon 9 rocket to launch it. It was the first one on the West Coast to launch, and then it came back and actually landed. And so they reused it. So the idea is it's the booster rocket, send it out, and then they detach, comes back to Earth, and lands on a launch pad. So we can actually reuse it rather than detaching and letting it go somewhere. So it was pretty cool. So if you see it.
That's insane.
Of course, you have the people that think it's a conspiracy and like, rockets don't look like that. I believe you, government. Yeah, okay. It's fun. It's like reading about flat earthers if you just want some good entertainment of those kind of people.
Actually, speaking of good entertainment, I have a really good one for you guys to all go and check out. And you need to do this when you have nothing but time. So like 9 o'clock at night and you're suffering from insomnia, jump on your Instagram or the Google and look up hashtag vegan cat. Exactly. So as we know, cats are predators. They eat meat. They eat other animals. It's what they do. But there is a group of people out there that feed their cats a vegan diet. Huh. And if you look at the pictures of their cats, they all look sickly and look like they're about to die.
Do they have like man buns and ponytails and stuff?
I didn't get that deep into the weeds on it, but maybe.
Maybe.
So, yeah.
So there you go. Vegan cats. Yeah. SpaceX launch. It's pretty cool. It's a longer video, but they show the whole thing. They have cameras attached to it. So you got to see the whole launch. It was pretty sweet.
That does sound pretty dope.
So the SpaceX launch and then, yeah. Everything else, sports ball, all that stuff. If you want to get into it, get into it.
Kavanaugh got confirmed.
Yeah.
I know everybody probably already knows that, but there you go.
News for the week.
News for the week.
Cool. All right. So then we'll just get into it.
What are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about overlanding and what overlanding is, and that's why we have guests here.
Oh, that's right. So please feel free to introduce yourselves.
I'm Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. And I'm an overlander. Step one, I've admitted the problem.
There you go.
And this is Regina, my wife.
In our videos, known as Dragon Lady.
Yeah.
That seems super racist. But it's cool. It's cool. I dig it.
You have to fight her over that.
I know. Yeah. And I have fought her over that. And she beat me. So we have fought. That's right. I have fought both of these people.
Oh, yeah.
And they both beat me. Or wait, no.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
I doubt I did.
I don't think you did.
I don't
You
think
probably I've, would now.
I don't think I've beat anybody in, like, at over jiu-jitsu. A year.
That suck. So anyhow.
So you mentioned videos. Explain more on that. Like...
Yeah,
what are your videos, what they are?
We have a YouTube channel called Rolling Dirty Overland. You can find us on YouTube by that name, Instagram and Facebook by that name. We just started doing the videos this summer. We've been overlanding about 10 years now. Okay. We're on our second truck. We actually wore a Toyota out.
Wow.
Which is hard to do.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Toyota FJ Cruiser that we started with kind of shook that thing loose till it was getting to where the truck was going to be our main concern, not our travel. So we got upgraded ourselves into a Toyota 4Runner. And we're in the process of getting that completely built up and ready to go the way the old truck was. Right now, we'll do our first big trip with it this coming June. In the meantime, it's just a lot of long weekends.
Right? Still fun?
Oh, yeah.
So what exactly is overlanding? For those that aren't familiar with it, or have they just heard the term?
Because I think a lot of people confuse overlanding with glamping. Like glamour camping. Because you see a lot of guys that have all of the overlanding gear in their trucks, and they're rolling down the freeway, and I'm like, dude, that thing's never been dirty. You may have seen an unimproved road, but you've never put work in on that thing. So, you know, I think a lot of people get confused that if they have the equipment for a specific thing, that's this thing that they do, and it's most likely not.
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap in all those different things that are kind of being called overlanding now.
Yeah.
As an official definition, it's what do they call that? Something about traveling where it's not about the destination, it's about the journey.
Oh, okay.
I always have trouble with that because I don't quite get what that means.
So
the yeah. destination and the journey are kind of all intertwined. They're
yeah.
can't have one without the other.
Yeah. Well, doesn't it kind of goes back to like the old adventure races and like the Sahara crossings and like the Amazon crossings and stuff with the old
camel land cruisers.
The camel challenge.
That's rovers, it. Those yellow. Yeah, everybody had a matching yellow rover and a crew of like five inside and like, no trails through the jungle, across rivers, across ravines with ropes. Crazy
pretty
stuff.
Pretty cool old videos.
Should we say overlanding is kind of, it's like a combination of like what John was talking about, like glamping, where your idea is to go somewhere and it's about the journey, obviously, and you have to have a destination and everything to get to it, but it's making it so like I want to be self-sustainable while getting there, and I want it to be a longer trip, not a day trip like you were talking about earlier. This isn't, I'm going to just go out and then turn back around and come back for dinner. So is it more of like a combination? Is it super different, or is it one of those broad spectrum terms? Yeah.
Well, I mentioned the official definition,
yeah.
As well as the that's always contrasted with the official definition of expeditionary travel, which is a destination is more the goal, which makes a little bit more sense. It's kind of can you get from here to here at all, or is there an off-road route or some sort of objective to getting from point A to point B that you're not sure can be done? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an expedition in that regard, which is a lot of what a lot of our travel is. I'd say maybe half of our trips are, can we get from Phoenix to Sedona or Phoenix to Flagstaff entirely off-road, research a route, build a route, and then go out and see if that route is viable.
Yeah.
With minimal off-road, or minimal on-road, I mean. And we've actually, on that exact thing, put together a route from Phoenix to Sedona that only has maybe 3 miles of pavement on it.
Wow.
That's a fun trip. We've done it twice now.
How long is a typical, what would you consider an overland trip? Like how many days? Is there a definition? Because we've talked about it, it's not a day out, day back, or day out and then come back same day. So what would you consider an actual overland trip?
All right. From what I understand, it's subjective because what we might consider to be an overland trip, somebody else might go like, pfft. So it's just subjective. It could be like for right now for us, it's a long weekend. Jim doesn't have the time like I do to go out and do, you know, 2-3 weeks at a time. So... And somebody else might have that opportunity to go out on a regular basis for a much longer trip. So I get it just really depends on who's doing the overlanding.
Okay. That kind of makes sense. I feel like that's with it's a general concept across all communities that just people that it's kind of like what we talk about the adventure bikes. Just, well, that's not a true adventure bike. This is, or
and yeah, an important point that I'd like to make about it, because right now there's since overlanding in the last year and a half has really exploded into this massive industry. Now I'm starting to see a lot of talk around the internet anyway, certainly not out on the trails. Those people don't argue about much. They just have a good time. But around the internet, a lot of argument about what is overlanding. Oh, what you're doing, that's not overlanding. What I do, that's overlanding. You know, it's
the same thing in every community.
I'm more badass than
them. Yeah, I overland harder than you do. You are weak.
Yep. So, yeah, I kind of like to say overlanding is whatever you kind of want it to be.
Makes sense.
Adventure is very, very subjective.
Yeah. And there's a certain part where you're, like, self-sustaining as much as possible, right? Like, if you go out by yourself, like, self-recovery stuff, you're able to feed yourself, you're able to do... bait your, well, I mean, you know, whatever, depending on the length of your travel. So there's a certain bit of like self-sustainment that's involved in it from the stuff that I've seen.
Yeah, you're trying to get off the grid too, so you're going to get out there where, you know, your cell phone's not going to work. So that's also part of it as well. It's just to get out. It's kind of that the road less traveled.
Yeah.
Trying to go where most people are not going to go. Doesn't have to be like on a super technical trail or anything. It's just to go where most people are not going to go.
So
I don't like not having cell phone coverage. Then how can I post to the Instagram?
Yeah.
That makes me sad.
I need the interwebs to know what I'm doing so they can approve.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you were to give advice on anybody to get started with just stuff laying around, because obviously there's, and we'll dive into it more, but there's more advanced equipment you can do to your truck or that you can have in your vehicle that makes it a little bit easier. But if they just wanted to get started, what would you recommend the bare minimum basic stuff that people might have laying around that they could start overlanding?
Whatever you've got. If you want to go out for overnight and all you've got is a Honda Civic and a couple of blankets, take off and go up a nice, easy forest road overnight. Mm-hmm. Stop someplace, throw down your blanket, sleep, start a fire, get up the next morning and continue on, go someplace else.
So it's not necessarily associated with you have to have this 4x4 crazy off-road rock crawler vehicle to do overlanding.
It's more of
a conceptual thing than it is an actual equipment thing.
If you start out with your Honda Civic, you're probably going to start looking at places you want to go and start seeing, well, my Civic's not going to go there.
Challenge accepted. There are a few obstacles that cannot be overcome with the proper application of speed.
Rent a Civic.
Exactly.
Your horizons extra expand.
Insurance. And then you're golden.
So, yeah, and it can go from there. You'll start seeing as you go out with what you have, what more do you need? What more does the vehicle need? What more gear do you need? And your trips kind of will be tailored to what you're capable of, maybe even getting up to the edge of what you're capable of, which might then indicate you need some more. You need some modifications to the vehicle so next time you're not stuck and need to be recovered off this thing that nobody else got stuck on. And so on for the vehicle. Same thing with camping gear is going out. And you can go to REI and spend $10,000 on camping gear and realize once you get out, $9,000 of it was unnecessary. And then go back and there are still things you don't have. So you go back and you spend another $5,000.
And yeah.
And get a thank you card from REI when you do that.
Yeah. We've done that. Getting ready for a large motorcycle trip.
Thank you card.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense. Like if you were to come to me and spend that kind of money, I'd probably send you a thank you card and a birthday card.
I don't think it was into the tens of thousands of dollars, but we were getting ready for a month-long off-road motorcycle trip a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And we needed all different gear for that.
Yeah.
Really kind of along the lines of backpacking gear, because they're small bikes.
Yeah.
And we went to REI and said, we'll probably need this, probably need that, probably need that, and then started going on shakedown rides and realized most of what we have is wrong. Back to REI for all new stuff.
Now did you take all the old stuff back to return it?
Some of it.
Yeah. Return equipment immediately.
Yes.
That's what REI stands for. It's fantastic. So I guess to get started in it, you're just doing like car camping with traveling.
Kind of.
I mean, is that kind of the essential idea? Because I do that with my kids. Like I don't go backpacking. I have kids. Forget it. Not even going to try. When I load my truck up for a two-day camping trip, though, it's like I'm going on a month-long caravan because I have children. Yeah. So, and sometimes we end up on forest roads, and we call them adventures. We call them whirlwind adventures at my house. You know, it's like Friday night, my wife will come home from work, and she'll be like, hey, let's go do this thing this weekend. And it's like 5:30 on Friday night. I'm like, well, we don't have any food. We don't have this. We don't have this. We don't have this. She's like, well, we'll figure it out as we go. Just grab the sleeping bags, grab the kids, grab some water, throw it in the truck, and let's roll. All right. some of the best times we've had, and we found some cool stuff too, like super common stuff that we didn't know was there, you know, on these adventures that we take. So,
and that's one of the things I really, really like is finding things. You may find when you get home later mm-hmm. and look up, hey, what was that thing we saw that was so cool, that place? It's all over the internet, and everybody knows about it. They've all been there before. It's an annual trip for some people. Yeah. You know, it's yeah. that well known. But you didn't know it was there, so you discovered something, and it mm-hmm. felt kind of cool and exciting and fun.
Oh, yeah. Would you say, do they have, it's kind of a curiosity thing, do they have people that, like, specialize in altering vehicles for overlanding? Yeah. Like, shops like that, or... I know a lot of guys, they're kind of the shade tree mechanics. They do their own stuff. That's kind of part of the adventure side of it. I want to do all my own alterations. And I believe you guys are going to start doing videos like that. You have some
yeah.
Where you've installed, but I think yeah. we had talked in the past, and you said you were going to do more of them. But do they actually have places that if you didn't want to do it, you're just like, I want to do this, but I'm not mechanically inclined. I don't want to work on my vehicle. Do they have shops that you can take to specifically
for that? Yeah, there are a few in town. I'll give a shameless plug to my favorite, Sierra Expeditions in Tempe. Mm-hmm. Specializes in overlanding or expeditionary type outfitting for vehicles. Will, the owner of that shop, biggest reason I like them is Will won't sell you stuff just because you read about it on the internet. Will... If he thinks something's unnecessary for your needs, he'll talk you out of it. Hmm. You don't need to spend that kind of money. You don't need the super titanium plated dual thing when a single, not titanium plated, copper plated will do just fine at a third the price. And he'll explain to you why, for your needs, you don't need to spend that money. That's really, really cool.
A
merchant that does that always gets my vote.
Yeah.
He's not just sucking in your money because you're willing to spend it.
Yeah.
He's making sure you get what you need. So they're out there. That's one that's local here in the Phoenix area. As far as local to other places, I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
And there's a ton of stuff online. There's companies where you can take your truck and give it to them and they'll... You know, you take your $50,000 truck and you give it to them and you give them another $50,000 and you get what you want. Or you just go to the company and you buy an Earth Roamer for like $1.2 million, which is just a fancy Ford van.
Yep. I think, obviously, if you want to stay more on the budget conscious side of things, you got to learn how to do it yourself. That's just it. Because general labor at a shop. Is what, like $90 an hour average? It's something
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, yeah it sounds about right.
One of the reasons I like to do all my own work building the truck is I know then how everything's put together. If anything has a problem out on the trail, I'm familiar with it. I'm mm-hmm. very familiar with it.
Yeah.
I have had problems on the trail that required me getting underneath the truck and dramatically altering, like, the alignment. So that's the tire wasn't rubbing on something after I impacted some big obstacle that I shouldn't have. And
that's what happens when you bend A-arms.
Yeah.
Yep. Actually, I bent a steering knuckle in that case.
Oh, God.
Put the tire into the upper control arm, so I had to crank on the alignment to get the tire to camber out as far as it would go, just enough to get home.
So I used to work in a factory that milled steering knuckles. Those are not, that's not an easy thing to bend. Not even a little bit easy to bend.
That was a second and a half of not paying attention to where I was going on the trail and smacked the passenger front tire into a rock that
didn't move
at all. That's bounced impressive. The entire truck up in the air, left me going, what did I just hit? And jeez, why doesn't the truck steer correctly now, and what's rubbing?
Oh, God. Wow, that's crazy. So you're saying it can become a very expensive hobby as well?
Yes, it can.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It is...
Very expensive.
It is as much or as little as you want it to be.
Yeah.
You can, like you had just said a moment ago, a $50,000 truck and $50,000 worth of modifications to it, and probably another $10,000 or $20,000 worth of just gear to load into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Can be, or it can be a $5,000 used Jeep Grand Cherokee, yeah. A $10,000 used Tacoma, and just go. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey.
Or get a Nissan Titan.
Get a Hilux.
Or a Nissan.
Get a Hilux.
So if you wanted to make overlanding, so you've obviously been through a bunch of trial and error, but to make it easier, what would be some equipment or even like direct vehicle mods that you would do immediately? Like you buy that used vehicle and you want it to be comfortable based on your experiences. What are some mods to that vehicle you do or some equipment you'd pick up that would make life just more enjoyable out there for the longer trips? Or
you want to go?
Sure. When we did the FJ, one of the first things that we did on it was tires.
Mm.
So we put the more off-road type tires, so either all-terrain or mud-terrain tires on it. We also looked at rock sliders. Those are the rails that go along the side. So a lot of times you smack on the sides and just slides along and doesn't dent the frame or the body. We also looked at doing skid plates, which is good. So you don't shred the bottom of the undercarriage of your vehicle. More heavy-duty suspension is what we looked at on ours. And then we did, for the FJ, we definitely needed to have the roof rack because it's storage-wise, it's just so small that we wound up having to store a lot of the stuff up on the roof, and the rack that came with it was just not... It's more for looks than anything else. So those were stuff. And then we eventually put a winch on the front end for part of it as that recovery tool that we would hope... We've never had to use it yet.
So, well, to recover other people a few times. I also, at the time, didn't want to spend $1,000 to $2,000 on a winch, so I bought a discount winch.
Mm.
Worked great 3 or 4 times and then started not working. Really, what was really cool about that was on the trail, somebody'd be stuck. Okay, it'd be somebody right in front of me, so I'm going to pull them back off this obstacle. The winch wouldn't work. Get home, I need to fix this. That works like a champ. Damn it. Okay, fine, the winch works. Get back out on the trail, need it again. Doesn't work. So that's one of those things, as with probably all of your modifications, it's worth spending the money on the quality equipment because you're going to need it. Mm. And you're going to need it at a really bad time.
Yeah.
Discount stuff, you probably don't want to rely on when you're in a really bad place. Very, very far from
anything.
You could be a day and a half from phone signal.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And from there, another half day to services and civilization.
Mm-hmm. So
there's a family that I follow on Instagram that just did like a big trip in Alaska, mm-hmm. like up through Canada and up into Alaska to the Arctic Circle and back down. And at some point, one of their shocks went bad. Like one of their shocks just like, nope, I don't want to work anymore.
So I think we know those people.
Yeah, probably because they're locals. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of followed that story and it was like, okay, he found a little town and they had a little shop and he called the company that, you know, and they sent the thing to him. But it basically extended their trip like 3 or 4 days, I think, in the end. But they were just kind of stuck because that one thing kind of went bad. So
I think that's a benefit too, of knowing how to fix your own vehicle. Because if you carry spare stuff and you have no idea how it works or how to put it on or replace whatever, it's kind of useless to carry around the spare stuff.
Yeah.
So kind of a benefit to...
That's another important thing too, is knowing your vehicle. If something fails regularly on that vehicle, something specific to, say, all Tacomas, they all have a problem with this sensor. whatever it might be. I'm just making stuff up. Then carry an extra one of those sensors so that you can just, and know that that's a problem. It's not really worth getting into a lot of crazy modifications to try to not have that sensor ever be a problem when you can just carry a sensor and keep right on going.
Which
goes to another thing. We're talking about modifying vehicles. I'm not a huge fan of doing a lot of modifications to the engine for engine performance or the drivetrain at all. Keep that stuff stock so that it stays very, very reliable as it can be. A lot of people do crazy modifications or build up old trucks with crazy modern engines, and they have lots of problems when they do that. They're not reliable at all. And in that case, then what it seems to be is their truck and building that truck is more their hobby than the traveling. You kind of can't have both as your hobby. You're either taking long trips reliably and safely, or you're working on the truck all the time.
Yeah.
And if you
sounds like every Jeep owner I've ever met in my life.
Hey.
Like, no shit. Every Jeep owner I've ever known in my life that does any off-roading.
Well, and that's what
like, oh yeah, we made it like 15 miles this week up that trail. Then the truck broke again. Damn it.
Well, that's a thing I found with the older vehicles too, is some of them don't like the new stuff. The new stuff was meant for newer engines and everything. You can't put new fancy stuff into those older vehicles without it having issues because it's going, I don't like this. This is not.
Yeah, you keep chasing stuff down the line. You put a super powerful, an LS crate engine in an old Land Cruiser 40. Well, now you find out those old drive shafts that you're using are snapping off.
They made for that.
So you get some kind of badass carbon fiber drive shafts, and that just tore the diff apart. Mm-hmm. So you get the diff fixed to where it's solid, and that just tore the axles apart or the CV joints up in the front. And you just chase those things around. And that's something that's real real common with a lot of Jeep owners, particularly through the steering. Something will go bad in the steering, so they'll fix that with the bomb-proof badass thing. And that'll just...
And then everything else is out of alignment.
Go down to the next weak link. It'll snap something else off because now this new super powerful steering box just snapped all your tie rod ends and on down the line.
I've seen that happen.
Until you're $30,000 into this rock crawler.
Until you're $300 Jeep body.
That's the only original thing on there.
Yeah.
And I found, too, having the tools, right tools. I actually just recently read a story. It was a Jeep story, go figure. But he had the U-joint front axles, and they broke. And he's like, well, I have spares, but he didn't have the tools to replace spares. He was like, okay.
Oh.
So you just made this giant paperweight with all the stuff to replace it, but not the tools to fix it. Carry the right stuff.
Just take the front half out. You put it in the back, and you just run it in two-wheel drive.
Or
if the rear one breaks, you just drive it in front-wheel drive forever.
So, well, back to, like, first things to get. Regina was talking about modifications to the truck and starting out with armor. It's kind of a crapshoot, really a coin toss between armor and recovery gear. Without armor, you're of course risking some really expensive stuff underneath the truck, like transfer cases, transmissions, engines getting busted, losing all their fluid and not working really well after that. And at which point you're probably going to be stuck, too. The armor, a lot of times, the skid plates underneath can really prevent you getting stuck because all those things you could get hung up on is now just one smooth surface underneath, and you'll just slide across that. But at the same time, if you're stuck, you need recovery gear and quality recovery gear. One of those yellow toe straps from Harbor Freight or Checker, not a great thing to start cranking on a vehicle with and taking up the slack. And
I'm gonna throw it away now. That's what I have in my truck. I have a Walmart toe strap.
If you have that, just know that impact from taking up slack is really, really rough on the chassis. It can bend a frame.
Nice.
So
perfect.
So if you have that and that's all you have for now, use that knowing that you got to take up the slack real easy.
Yeah.
Don't try putting impact on it. There are straps designed for that impact that are kind of like big giant bungee cords. They'll actually stretch and then kinetically pull load. Back.
Oh, nice.
Against that stretching to rebound, and they absorb the shock against the chassis when they get pulled tight,
mm-hmm.
as well as provide extra force because they're trying to rebound. They're really cool, and you can pick one up. ARB makes a they're called snatch straps. Or okay. Kinetic recovery straps. ARB makes them. Viking Winch Lines makes one. And there are a few other companies.
Sweet. So you've talked about suspension stuff. A lot of guys confuse suspension upgrades with lift kits. Is a lift kit necessary for, like, say, your standard height 4Runner? Do you need a lift kit or do you just need beefier suspension parts? Because I think a lot of people get confused about that. They're like, oh, I have to upgrade the suspension and make it taller and make it this and that.
They do both. They both do the same thing. The taller suspension is giving you lift, or the beefier suspension is okay. lifting you up. Ground clearance matters.
Yeah.
Okay. To a point. You don't want to get the thing so tall that it's now tippy, that the center of gravity is way up in the air and it wants to fall over on its side. Larger tires also give you better clearance, better performance off-road, better ability to get through different obstacles, up little edges and things. And most of the time, the truck's going to have to get lifted a few inches to get bigger tires under it. So that all kind of plays together.
Okay.
So like a giant 6-inch lift plus isn't necessary, but.
Well, you mentioned like the Toyotas. Mm-hmm. No. The FJ Cruiser and the Tacomas are really happy with like only a 2-inch lift, 2 inches taller suspension, and say 33-inch tires. The 4Runner likes about 3 inches because it's a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs to be a little higher to clear that center the same way that the FJ or yeah. the Tacoma will. Jeeps do okay. Jeeps in like the Wrangler type, the what I call the old CJ style. Very, very short wheelbase. They're kind of good with not as much, although dudes will lift those things 4 or 5 inches and put like 40-inch tires on them. They do great off-road. They do great at rock crawling. They don't do as well at, say, long-range travel, getting out on something like 100 miles of washboards in Death Valley.
No, I'm good. Those... It sounds like a terrible ride in a CJ.
No.
Like, even the new Jeeps, a buddy of mine had a 16 or a 17 four-door, and that's kind of what he got when he started kind of getting into overlanding. He's like, dude, the thing's great. He's like, I love driving it in town and doing this and that. And he's like, it does pretty well on some of the trails and stuff. He's like, but when it's just like long, shitty roads, he's like, I hate driving it. It's like riding in a potato wagon.
It's just
like, well, do something about it. And he did. Bastard.
He bought a Tundra.
He's like, look at my shiny new truck. And I'm like, now I got to go buy a truck. Thanks, buddy.
So what are some, like, over-the-top upgrades that you do, like gear, vehicles, so even stuff inside? And there's one thing in particular that you talked about, your fridge. Remember we talked about a recent class, and you were like, I don't know, this doesn't seem necessary. And then after you bought it, you're like, yep, this is amazing.
Yeah, when I first started, the first time I did a more than one-night trip, it was the very first run, the trial run of the Phoenix to Sedona route. A bunch of different guys came along. I kind of said, hey, I got this route. Who wants to come with me? And turned out 20 trucks showed up.
Dang.
Okay, cool. wasn't expecting all that. I figured there'd be 5 guys I knew and that'd be it. One of the guys had a refrigerator in the back of his truck. And I still, my FJ Cruiser at the time was fairly new and I was still building it. Knew of the refrigerators and thought, well, that's cute. I'll put that at the bottom of the list. Once the truck's got everything, maybe then I'll stick a refrigerator in it if I got $1,000 that's not doing anything.
Yeah.
because it was going to be, that was going to be a 4-day trip, I had perishables in the cooler and I thought, well, dry ice lasts longer, so I'll use dry ice. Halfway through the first day, my dry ice had evaporated. It was just gone. Guy with the refrigerator said, you can put your perishables in my fridge. Boom, top of the list.
Buying a fridge.
Ice, later that week, I had a fridge.
Yeah, he came home and said, we're getting the fridge. I said, okay.
For multi-day trips, even if your ice holds out, you're still dealing with all of your stuff's just swimming around in really cold water.
Yeah.
You wind up with soggy cheese, soggy bread. Yeah.
That's never good.
No good. Soggy meat, which is really no good.
Meat that has stuff crawling.
And the fridge is just great for that because you keep all that capacity. You don't got to fill it up with ice. Everything stays. We have the ARB fridge, which is a single temperature area. There are fridges that dual chamber. One side can be freezer. One side can be fridge at different temperatures. And we have it set to just above freezing, and everything is that temperature. It stays good forever. We can go out with 5 days worth of food.
Is this the same one that you've had?
Right.
Oh, my God.
That thing's been running continuously for 9 years.
Nine. Well, that 3-week period when we sent it in to get repaired.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
I had a problem with it at one point and got on the phone.
I remember talking to you about that.
Got on the phone with an ARB rep, and he said, well, how much does it run? I said, well, since I got it. Wait, you mean that fridge has been running continuously for, at that time, it was 7 years? We've never heard of a fridge running that long. We want that back here. We want to see it. So I figured they'd keep it and stick it in their museum or something and send me a new one.
Well, that'll be the next time you send it.
They fixed it and sent it back. They said, keep going with it. We want to know how it goes.
Well, what was wrong with it?
Some electronic component inside.
Some stupid sensor.
Yeah.
Some widget inside the whiz bangs. Yeah. Figures.
And it's still running. That was 3 years ago.
But it's even nice to have just to run around town in.
Yeah.
Because we always have, like, cold water or doing the grocery shopping in the summertime. And if we have other stops to go, we throw our perishables in the refrigerator and we're good to go.
That's a good idea.
It's great on the range.
I bet. That's what I was going to say. Summer's here. That's probably a lot nicer. You're not worried about ice or having to stop. You have a fridge.
I think I'm just going to buy one now.
Totally worth the money.
So what about some other upgrades that you'd say, or upgraded gear that you've gotten?
Are we looking at the super cool guy badass stuff?
Oh, yeah.
We have...
like over the top.
Yeah, what is...
Oh, we just did.
We just bought, and we won't see it. It won't be delivered to us till the end of December, a Turtleback Expedition model trailer.
Ooh.
Full kitchen built in, full electricals, hot water, a king-size rooftop tent on top of the trailer.
Yeah.
We just added the 270 Fox Wing.
To the Darchy awning, 270 degree, goes all the way around the thing, except for where the tent is. So it'll be kind of like a...
Yeah, I've looked at these.
Oh, the upgraded suspension on it.
Yeah, with their new super cool guy suspension. So that's kind of like...
Matching rims and tires.
Oh, yeah.
We've got. We
went all out.
We've kind of got this down. Then do we really want to keep sleeping on the ground in a tent with all
you
the
guys didn't have a rooftop by now?
Sleeping mat troubles.
What? Oh. That's the first thing I'm doing. I'm putting a bed rack on my truck. My buddy Chad and I are going to build a bed rack.
I like that for pickups. I don't like it for SUVs because you're
super high.
150 to 200 pounds way, way up there.
Yeah.
And you are altering appreciably your center of gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very excited.
Yeah, I would be too. I want one of these now.
Yeah.
I'll have to talk to Mama.
But that's not necessary.
Right.
No.
Yeah, we're not talking about the necessary stuff. So this is the fun stuff.
What my buddy did was he got an old generator trailer from like APS or something. And built a rack to mount his tent on, and then he uses the inside. You know, right now he just puts bins and stuff in there with his, you know, in his coolers.
Keep the dust out of it, yeah.
But yeah, he tows a trailer around quite a bit.
We've been wanting to get a trailer for several years now. Because, like I said, with the FJ, the storage is just horrible. And that's just with two of us. So that's something that we had been wanting to do for quite a while, and then we decided to go ahead and take the plunge and went in and ordered. So
nice. So nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Toys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you see that MSRP.
That was tough.
Yeah. That was like, I think it costs more than my car does. So.
Yeah. And then you start adding. So even just that base price was tough. Then you start, well, it's got to have this, got to have that, got to mm-hmm. have that. And it went up quite a bit from there.
Oh, I bet.
I won't say how much. Yeah, that's not necessary.
I can imagine.
Okay. It's just that's our Christmas present to ourselves, our anniversary presents, and everything else
for the next decade. Yeah. So. It's like the next decade's worth of gifts to yourself. You're like, sweet. We can live like gods when we're in the field now.
So. And we have coming up in June another month-long trip. And I think the tipping point for us that threw us over the edge was going on a trip Labor Day with a friend that had a teardrop trailer he was pulling. We get to camp, and we would start.
Dude, that's awesome.
About an hour, 45 minutes to an hour of camp setup.
Yeah.
Before we were in chairs, stoves going, cooking dinner. All he did was park.
Yeah, he's like, park, levelers down. So, yeah. Boop, flop out the tent, open the back.
Well, with a teardrop, it's not even that. He'd take a chair out of the teardrop and sit down. And declare camp is established. That's it. And then watch us set up our tent. And even more tearing it down. It takes a lot longer to tear down a camp than set it up. An hour to an hour and a half.
Yeah, because you got to put everything. You got to clean it all out. You got to fold it all up.
You got to get the spiders out of the tent.
Yeah. So now, and that was tough to watch. While Tim, in the morning then, Tim would just put his chair in the teardrop and stand there waiting on us.
Drink his coffee and be like, yeah. You guys are slow.
You guys ready to go yet? Come on, we're burning daylight. And we're looking at that trip coming up in June. We're going to do that hour and a half to 2 hours every day.
Like this June?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be a month long, about 4,000 miles off road.
Thank Jesus. That'll be fun.
Yeah. And I thought, well, that sucks. We need to reduce that to about a 5 minute camp setup and 10 or so minute teardown.
Yeah.
Which the trailer has all that. Just open up the kitchen and you're cooking, swing open the tent and you're ready to sleep. If it's raining, that awning rolls open in 10 seconds.
The other thing, too, is as you get older, sleeping on the ground just isn't as comfortable.
So. It gets harder.
Yeah.
So it's.
Yeah. It sucks. Super sucks.
So, I mean, that's where you can get outlandish. You can get into crazy stuff with the vehicle, too, that's not necessary. And I would say a lot of the vehicle modification stuff that may or may not be necessary depends on what you're doing. If you have. The big cliche now seems to be a fifth-gen 4Runner from Toyota, the current model 4Runners. Mm-hmm. 3 or so inch lift, some really bitchin' rims from Method or Icon, King or Icon suspension, bumpers from who knows where. There's a number of different places aftermarket steel bumpers for it, front and back. A bitchin' low-profile Gobi roof rack. And a ladder to get up to the roof, and then never, ever leaving town, never leaving pavement. And the thing is always spotless and shiny. Yeah. And then, that's pointless.
Yeah.
That's, all of that same stuff for what we do, pretty cool, except the rims probably. And I don't like that roof rack because it doesn't hold things very well, but it looks cool.
Yeah, that's... Come on. I know you've been to the expo that they have every year.
Yes.
Yeah, there's that.
50% of that's looking cool, right?
Like, that was one of the things that we noticed this year that we went just looking at the vehicles and thought, wow, they're so shiny and scratch-free.
Yeah.
And Jim purposely, as we go off-road, oh, there's a bush hanging over there. I need to go drive the car by it and scratch the paint on it. So you don't see a lot of that.
I think that's a big indicator, especially here in Arizona. You can tell if they have that good old fashioned desert pinstriping, then you know that vehicle's at least touched dirt once.
What was it? The other day we were at Sprouts and there was a Jeep we parked by it and had snorkel and it was all kitted out and everything. And we looked at it and there was not a scratch on it. And the guy came out and was like, "Oh, us Overlandy people have to park next together, each other." And we were like looking at our truck, which was dirty and muddy and scratched and everything. And his was just all shiny new.
It's like making a Gucci Glock and then never shooting it.
Yeah. That's what exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Or slow fire at the public range. They never take it to a to a high stress class or anything.
Right. Yeah. Okay. They don't know. So obviously there's dangers with overlanding. What are some of the most common ones you see? Other than, I think obstacles is kind of an obvious one, just being off road and the obstacles you might encounter. But what are some dangers and how have you learned to mitigate them or even be more prepared for them? Thinking like, oh, this could happen.
One of the things that we do is that we do make sure that we let people know where we're going. And then we also use a spot.
Nice.
And so at the end of the day, hit the spot and it shoots out a message to the people that we've let know where we're at, know that we got to where we're going and we're okay. So that's one thing, because it's a satellite communication. So if you're out of cell phone range, you don't have to worry about it. You can still get your messages out. The other thing to know what your capabilities are. We did, a month or so ago, we did Cherry Creek Road on the east side of the Sierra Anchas. We hit a point and we just said, you know what? It's for what we have. It's not worth it trying to go and possibly tipping the vehicle over. So we turned around and went back. And that's just one of the things. Know what your capabilities are. Not your driving capabilities. Know what your vehicle capabilities are. Because that'll be a big thing right there. Oh, yeah. Is not get into something that you can't do. That'll be the biggest thing is, I think, right there.
Yeah. Know how to navigate off-grid. Not relying on Google Maps or online services or GPS services, know how to read a map and be able to get back. That's probably the biggest thing with most of overlanding is be able to get home. Probably as much so as being able to get out there. Don't be entirely reliant on on-grid technologies.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
I think another thing, too, is we've gone through the medical training courses through Independence Training. Do that as well.
Name drop.
You need to do.
Shameless plug.
You need to know how to deal with the eventuality that there might be some type of injury that's going to be involved. Mm-hmm. And it could be something as simple as you're walking and you tripped and fell and you have a big gash or something. So, know that.
Okay. Sorry, we were just reading. One of our listeners said,
"Says, how do you guys communicate with other vehicles when you're outside of cell range?" Like, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to that, but I mean, do you guys?
Yeah. Either CB or ham. We prefer the ham radio. Much, much longer range, much better quality, much better reliability of comms. You don't get around a corner and suddenly can't talk to anybody else in the group. The ham radio also gives you the opportunity to reach repeaters around a whole region and therefore reach civilization. Somebody else, you could hit a repeater 30 miles away that will get you some guy sitting in his basement or wherever base station ham radio guys set up their stuff, who can then call sheriffs, call for rescue if you need that sort of thing. So it's really good emergency comms. CB radio is cheap and easy. So a lot of people use CB radios. We're equipped with both so that whatever group we're in, most groups will have mostly CBs.
Yeah. Well, for a ham radio, you have to get licensed.
Yeah.
You have to take the exam and get licensed in order to operate it.
You have to know what you're doing.
We actually did a show. We had a student, I believe. He was a student of ours, but he's real big into ham radio here in Arizona. He came on and did think we've done two shows with him. He's talking about some of the benefits, and like the radios themselves are cheap. Like you can get the Baofengs on Amazon. They're like $50. But then you start getting into all the, because you can hook into cell phone repeaters based on the repeaters in the area and actually make cell phone calls from your ham radio or send text messages and stuff like that. So, and it's a worldwide issue. It's a worldwide thing. So,
yeah.
You know, if you, and he said it wasn't super difficult to get licensed. I think it was a nominal fee, and then you have to take a test. And then I think he said you have to redo the test like every year, every
10 years.
Every 10 years. So,
yeah, for the lowest level license technician, it's called.
Yeah.
A little bit of studying. The test isn't terribly hard if you study for a couple of weeks. And really, the best way to study is just do practice tests online. There are a few websites that offer the test. Just keep doing practice tests until you're reliably passing them, and then go down to, you can look up online to see testing schedules and locations around town. I don't remember what the fees were, but it's all pretty cheap.
Yeah, it's not. From what I recall, it was fairly inexpensive.
$10, $20, $30, something not.
Less than $100, for sure, less than $100, which I could spend a week in Monster, so. It's not a good habit. So, anything else that you guys want to mention? Any tips, tricks, kind of last final thoughts?
I would say just go out and do what you can with what you have right now. See if it's something that you do enjoy, and then go from there. So don't think that if you don't have, you know, some four-wheel drive vehicle, or you don't have the camper, or you don't have all the fancy gear, that therefore you can't go out and do this.
I'd say there's one thing people skip over. I assume that there's clubs, communities in the area that do it. I've seen it with vehicles in particular. Like there's Jeep clubs all over. But if you're not familiar with it, you can find people. You don't have to have the in with somebody. They don't have to have your direct contact information. Now you can. You can get a hold of Jim and Regina for questions. But if you're curious and you want to look for rides, trips going up, like Jim said, I'm sure there's people out there. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure there's some sort of type of organization, club, whatever, of people that frequently do it, whether it's just a group of people, not necessarily a formalized club. But you don't necessarily have to try to do it alone. There's people that will teach you things.
Yeah, there are. One good resource is just whatever vehicle you have. If it's a Toyota 4Runner, go to the Toyota 4Runner groups on Facebook. Particularly like Arizona 4Runners, and you'll find people talking about going out, and anyone's welcome. If you've got a Jeep, same thing there. I would say probably the Jeep people are probably more organized into clubs and official events and things. Go to azfj.org. It was originally an FJ Cruiser group, but they're not snotty that way about the kind of vehicle you have. They don't care. They've often got things going on, and anyone's welcome.
Sweet. So keep an eye out. Anything else you guys want to talk about on overlanding in general that we didn't touch base on? I mean, obviously we could talk about it for a while about what it is, what to do, all that kind of stuff. But just to get people started, get them interested, is there anything that you would, again, recommend?
Yeah, you just use your head, get out there and try it. Don't get in over your head. Kind of be smart about where you're going. If something's a little challenging, it's always best to go with someone else, especially somebody that's got experience. It can get risky. The more remote you get and the more difficult the terrain gets, the higher risk that's out there, the more you can get yourself into some serious life and death trouble. And that's where it's a good idea to know a lot of outdoor survival stuff. If you get into trouble, how to stay out there and get yourself rescued. But that shouldn't be a problem if you're smart about what you're doing. If you're going by yourself, as one vehicle, even if it's three or four people in that vehicle, it's still considered a solo run. make sure people know where you're going, when your rough course, when to expect you to be back on grid and send a message, say, hey, we're cool.
It's kind of useless.
If that message doesn't come, here's where to send the general region of where to send and our route.
Here's where to send help.
It's kind of useless if the only people that know where you're going are in that one vehicle.
Yeah.
We all know we're here. Cool.
That's helpful. Hey, nobody else does. We've been places there probably hasn't been traffic in years, let alone months or weeks.
Jesus.
Nobody's coming.
Random dude's not just going to drive by today.
We've also been lots of places where it's like a freeway with people going by on the dirt road.
Yeah.
Every 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. So.
Like, yeah.
Sweet. Well, I know I'm going to go spend like $50,000 this afternoon. Yeah. Great.
Easy stuff.
No. Life would kill me.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
I'm sure we'll probably be in contact to get answers to questions that we're going to get. Because we have a small live, you know. And apparently the feed was bad again today.
What? Weird.
Super crazy.
Just a heads up.
I don't know.
On the actual feed, that will change. Our internet is being installed tomorrow.
Nice. So new high-speed business class type stuff.
So new high-speed internet. Not
so dialogue. That's good news.
Yeah.
Anybody, to what you were just saying about questions, anybody that's listening can contact us through Rollin' Dirty Overland on any of those social media platforms.
Now, that is Facebook, R-O-L-L-I-N, because I tried looking up Rolling Dirty, and I got some weird stuff. So it's Rollin' without the G.
Rollin'.
So
remember, you can bring us out to train with you if you want to see us. Come out and visit you, see us in person, our smiling faces.
Hear our terrible opinions about things.
Yeah, it's not that hard to get us out there. Just email us at info@trainingaz.com. Remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Yeah.
Shortly.
Arms Room,
Independence Training, and Redwire Gear, and Rollin' Dirty Overland. Rollin' Dirty.
Yeah.
Any questions you can send us, we'll direct it to them if we don't know how to answer it. So remember to send it in. We are proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Be sure to listen to all the other shows that are on there and his whole spiel. I don't know it.
Yeah, bunch of shows on Heroes Media Group. Adam's a good dude. Yes. All of the shows are super awesome, and they range from super awesome stuff like what we talk about to really boring stuff about finance and home mortgages.
Yeah.
And everything in between.
A broad spectrum.
So check them out.
So next week we have a pre-recorded show.
Because Glenn will be in recovery.
Yeah, he's in recovery from his...
removals.
Specialized removal surgery.
Yeah.
Hopefully they find it and
Godspeed.
That's microsurgery?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's rough.
Microsurgery.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't know if they can. Yeah. Anyways. So it's a pre-recorded show about the essentials on essential hunting gear and how to prepare yourself for a hunt. So those of you getting ready to go hunting here shortly, we'll talk about we did talk about.
It's a show coming to you in the present, from the past, in the future.
I never remember how to say that. I'm just
saying, I know.
It's pre-recorded.
Yeah, it's a pre-recorded show. Next week we won't be live, but then the following week when we all come back, we'll all be back here together, right?
Yes.
We'll all be live together for a glorious reunion.
And new internet.
And new internet, yes. So stand by.
Yeah. But until then, stay aware, stay safe, train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room. Thank you.
Bye.